Okay, I'm calling the meeting to order at 7:31 p.m. And I'm going to appoint Tom Crockett for Jim Cropley. And I'm going to appoint Diane DiNunzio for Steve Clark. So we have six tonight. And I don't see anyone other than Tom Crockett online. I've been watching the waiting room. Okay, so the next thing to do is to approve the minutes of March 12th, 2025. I didn't find anything.
Move to accept the minutes as written.
I'll second.
Tom Crockett moves and Diane DiNunzio seconds. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? And so the vote is 6-0-0.
I was absent, but I can still vote on these.
No,
Do I have to
you can't.
abstain?
You have to abstain.
I abstain.
5-0-1. I don't see any residents present either in the hall or online. And we don't have any staff tonight. They're both on vacation. There is no old business, there is no new business, but there is an ongoing discussion about the Bolton subdivision and zoning regulations. And so there were some things that I wanted to raise. And once we've talked about those, anybody can raise any other ideas or issues. And the idea is that now that we've got the regulations codified, we can start simplifying them to make them easier to use and to increase people's enjoyment of their property. That's the idea. And so we have made all the changes to our regulations that the legislature, sorry, has put into statute regarding alternate accessory regarding accessory dwelling units and some other things that will are and the idea is to increase the number of different kinds of housing and also affordable housing. And the accessory dwelling units, even if they're not haven't been especially well used, I'm planning to create an accessory dwelling unit in my house at some point. And it's an advantage because it creates, you have a rent just basically support your property taxes. So I think it's something that will probably at some point more people will start taking advantage of. But as part of that, part of the discussion with Desegregate Connecticut, one of their things is that they'd like to remove minimum floor area requirements because we set minimums for different sizes, for single family house, for apartments, for different sizes of the dwelling units. And the reason that I would like to remove them is to give more flexibility, and also because there are already minimums that are in the building code and HUD minimum property standards. If anybody's going to sell a house or get a loan, get a mortgage, they're going to have to meet certain requirements, and one of those things is the size of the rooms. And I think that I think we're those standards and those regulations already exist, and that we would give more people flexibility if we simply removed all the minimum floor area.
I have a question. Yes. So if you remove it and they still have to go by what's in the other requirements, statute, then it really, you're not really,
but they'll be a lot smaller than what we our minimums.
Okay.
Could you tell us what our minimums are? Do you know?
I think it's 1,000.
It's 1,000 square feet of living area for a single family house. And I think it's like 600. I could get the regulations up. And
so that would preclude things like studio apartments and stuff like that. Okay.
How different are the HUD and other governing standards? 1,000 is pretty tiny.
Well, I keep matching these home renovations.
They won't let you do a tiny house.
No,
they won't. These regulations won't let you do a tiny house.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Would it make sense in where we have a minimum floor requirements just to say must meet standards set by so and so and so and so, and then that way, if they change, we don't need to change again.
I think that's a good idea,
Trish. Because otherwise you have people who don't have to make an application for a mortgage and who don't have to go through HUD, and then you have no limits.
Right.
Well, it also makes people aware of what else is going on.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
It also makes people look into what other standards are and what other requirements are, so they don't think that. A lot of times people come in here and they think that we've created these things, and it's not us,
not all the time.
So
do you know what HUD's standards are? Do you know what these other...
I don't, but I can tell you that in the building code, there has to be one room of at least 120 square feet, but that's only... That's 10 by 12. So it's quite small, and you can... You know, if you've seen some of the setups at IKEA, you could do a whole
New York City.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. It's this thing of like you're saying, 1,000 is small, but now you know my addictions. I don't like to watch home renovations shows where they're, you know, going to buy a house for $1 million and then sink another $1 million. I could not care less. I like to see the ones that are down with, you know, half their foundation gone and the roof blown in, you know, those are the ones I like. And some of those houses are like 900 square feet and they still have like two bedrooms and a sort of...
Mine's 1,000 square feet and I have three bedrooms and two bathrooms.
Well, so you know, and that's a See, this is what we're talking about, is opening up our minds that you don't have to have these huge rooms and still be able to not only be comfortable yourself, but also start your family there, too.
It's fine for me now, but it was tight when the kids were home.
Well, how many kids did you have?
Three.
We had tons of kids, and I had six kids in my family. He had eight. And so, you know, as far as being able to physically do it, you can do it. But we've gotten away from that, where every child has to have their own bathroom. That is just so foreign to me.
In Manchester, we had a Cape, and it had the two bedrooms upstairs, and my father had finished a half bath in between. Most of the people in the neighborhood had another full bath upstairs, and we had three boys in one bedroom and three girls in the other. And the seventh kid was starting to come along. No, we got to move.
You have seven children?
No.
I was the oldest of eight. I was the oldest of eight.
And I had a family of six, and we had one bath. When I found out that he always had a half bath in his house,
she was envious.
Because we only had one bathroom, period. And for a while, our grandmother lived with us too. But I mean, that's if we're going to solve this housing problem, we have to change the culture of how big a house is a good house. And there's no reason to say that the classic, you know, is one of your bedrooms in your three-bedroom ranch a really small one?
No, They're all small.
No, I'm talking about you have the big one, which is probably a medium size.
No, they're all.
They're all small.
They're all like. They're 10 all the by same 10.
Size. Oh, those are. Oh, yeah, but.
One, I think one might be 10 by 12.
Yeah, that's the big one. And then you have the 10 by 10, and then there's one that's like 8 by 9 or something like the little one.
The HUD minimum property standards for a bedroom is 7 by 10.
Yeah, 7 by 10. Okay. So, you know. You know, it's doable, but I mean, I think it's only a question of psychology as to whether or not that seems to be. I mean, you're right. It is not great for 8 kids or 6 kids or something.
I think people are having that many kids anymore.
But I mean, that kind of a house has fallen out of favor as far as building.
Been able to be built.
Right.
They're building a lot of them in, and maybe it might be Habitat for Humanity, but in East Hartford and in Hartford. The smaller house, kind of house I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a new development in Manchester. It was some time ago now, but that's what they did. They built, the 4 rooms on the first floor and then left the upper floor unfinished. And people could do, what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's fine. I don't have an issue with removing it if you state that there are, standards.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea to give the references.
Yeah. Anybody else? Anybody from the stratosphere there? Nope.
Hey, Tom?
Yes.
They want to make a lesser minimum in all zones, right?
Yes. Like
all zones.
Right.
Some of those most of those houses in East Hartford and Manchester are probably on really small lots with city water and city sewer, which unfortunately we don't have. So that's another problem too. I mean,
well, the smaller the house, also
can't do that. But I don't know. It's a problem. But you're right. The smallest bedrooms can be 7 by 10.
Well, smaller bathrooms and why be fewer bathrooms would also mean that you would have a smaller septic system required.
No, closer bedrooms.
No.
Closer bedrooms?
Closer bedrooms.
Oh, no. See? I think they
put a minimum 3 bedrooms.
And 20 minimum people in the house and only bedrooms. Size septic system.
Or HUD minimum property standards?
Yeah.
You can't build a 2-bedroom house? Is that what you're saying?
You still have to put a minimum size septic system, unless it's
state most. Oh, I see.
That too.
Okay.
Back allowing it an undersized one, because if somebody wants to put an addition on, it's a whole other problem.
Generally, they don't like to build the little houses because it doesn't cover the cost of all the infrastructure that has to go in. And you have to do a well and a septic and a this and a that. Once you buy the lot, build the tiny house, it doesn't cover your costs.
Well, it sure is better than paying all the heating and everything else for the bigger house.
Yeah, I mean, it's good for people who buy them or people who live in them, but the builders don't want to do it because there's not profit. But anyway, that's got to change.
The cost of the property and what that goes into the ground.
Exactly. That'll change. It's got to change.
So the other thing that relates to size is item D2, and we require basically a 200 by 200 foot lot because we set frontage
mm-hmm.
at 200 feet, and then it's got to be 40,000 square feet, which means it's going to end up being a 200 foot by 200 foot square. And we used to be willing to go down to 150. And there were some existing non-conforming lots that you could still build on because they were in existence at the time of the change.
My house, because it's not square, the lot is like a pie shape.
And then we allow, I think, we allow an odd shaped lot at the end, you know, when the last lot can be a little odd shape in order to get it. And then when it's around a cul-de-sac,
right,
you know, we have some wedge shape that's our, yes, that's approved. And what I was thinking of is do it around the natural restrictions of water and septic. One of the justifications for large lot zoning, oh, as well, we have to have, you know, I have to have a well and a septic and well, and you're always going to end up, always going to end up with a 200 by 200 foot lot, but you don't, because it all depends on the soil type. And
so
I remember Al Weedy did some studies of, you know, like, I think it was in particular the property that's going to have the mobile homes on it. And he was showing how you could easily get a much smaller lot.
Keep the distances between the wells and the septic and still, yeah, meet the minimums.
Yeah. And and I remember, you know, a talk from what's now DEEP, and they said there were some lots that they would test, and you couldn't even get one bedroom on there because it just
didn't work out.
Yeah, we're talking up on the expensive properties up on Avon.
Oh.
So I'm just.
Are there state standards that are set in terms of sizes? I mean, I would think that.
Not in terms of the size of the lot, but in.
Our lots are all going to be distances. Well, first of all, what kind of soil to perk out a septic system?
Right.
And then where that goes and where the well goes.
And you can't
where the backup septic goes, yep, and where the this goes and the that goes. So, I mean, we have a lot of things that already determine the size.
That's right.
But the shape, I was thinking the most obvious thing in my mind is that the 100-foot frontage. Now, the primary purpose for that, is that for privacy, or is that for line of sight, or what?
As I understand it, is that good distance makes good neighbors.
It's a way to restrict new housing. That's what it is. The bigger the size lot is, you know, the less houses you get in.
Well,
it was real common thinking and. You know, last century and beginning of this century, but now I think it's kind of changed around because everybody's concerned about tax dollars and doing this and that. But there's no question there are some neighborhoods listing some 2-800 houses and a half acre lot and paying taxes on an 800,000 home. But they don't have to sell the lot unless they want to sell it. The cost is going to be the overriding thing here, and that's the problem.
Mm.
Certainly look into it with other towns and do them. Did you see anybody see the JI tonight?
No.
The state of Connecticut. I'll see if I get the article, but the state of Connecticut wants to ban all limits on multifamily housing, two family housing in any zone. Now
they want to ban what?
Ban the prevention of two family homes in any zone. So you could put a two family in any zone. It was up to the state. That's when the bill's moving forward. I don't feel very good, and I got a wicked headache. I just came to want to make a quorum. I can let me see if I can find the article.
Okay. Is there any zone where we can't put in a duplex in Bolton?
Well, your R1 zone.
One. R1 is single family.
Only.
So the people who, so the duplexes we do have are like on Brandy Street?
And prior to zoning.
Oh, prior to that rule. Okay.
And that was another thing that I was going to suggest is that you increase the, is that you let people have a two family as of right, possibly a three or four. I realize that four
is apartment building.
Four is pushing the limit, but
I think two families are fine. I mean, there's several down on French Road.
There's one on Route 6.
They're actually kind of nice to have around.
Brandy Street.
Yep. Brandy.
A couple down there. They blend right in.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I found tonight's JI. And the headline is Bill would prevent bans on multifamily housing zone. I guess any multifamily. And the example you use is Trumbull, Connecticut has had a moratorium on multifamily houses for 6 years in a row. So
that's a I don't think you're supposed to do that.
Yeah, well, this is what's going on right now.
That would be one way to take a step towards more affordable housing would be to allow multifamily in a R1 zone. I don't have a problem with a two family.
So
I
is get that it like a duplex?
Yeah.
Side by side. Yeah, that's fine. What's wrong with that?
I agree.
I think if you get into three and four, that's different. Yeah. And you're
okay, that's what I said. That's why I wanted to get a sense of the room.
Yeah.
I would be reluctant to go above four, but if
I would hesitate to go above two.
If then like I said, that's
an R1, but if you have other zones, like a mixed use kind of thing.
No, what we did was we did away with the requirement for the retail on the first floor.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like the two, the duplex.
Okay, so we'll.
But I'm in agreement.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Like I said, I'm just trying to get a sense of the room and what's possible. Yeah. Politics is the art of the possible.
That might be more attractive also to people that are retired, older, that don't want to move out of town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they bought a two-family or had a two-family built, they'd have somebody paying the taxes for it.
Yeah.
Well, it's also
you have your kids on one side and you on the other.
That's right.
You know? Yeah. Then you maybe have care.
And it's also a way for a young family to start out because, again, you have someone to share the rent.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about reducing exactions for open space. I thought we had to meet an open space minimum requirement by state statute.
Well, then we should. Then that's something I will have staff look into.
And if we have met that minimum, then I think we could flag areas of connectivity that you won't make an exception on, and then reduce some of your fees in lieu of. But I don't think, I think especially when things are going to, when more building is going to need to happen, you're going to need to protect your open space. That's my personal feeling. And there are areas that are more sensitive and more important than others.
Well, just the wetlands we have in this town.
Wetlands don't count as all wetlands
don't. Oh, right.
No, they don't count as open space automatically.
Okay.
They're protected through our wetlands regulations. You can only have a certain percentage of wetlands in your open space.
Oh, okay.
And the formula is it's crazy. It's a crazy formula.
Okay. Well, do you know what it is? Okay.
It's like, it's a postulate and a theorem all in one. But I would be concerned about reducing our need for open space.
Don't we have like some, and this is from bequeathed lands and such, don't we have some sort of a parallel thing going with rails to trails there, like behind the high school?
Some of that is still privately owned. Some of it is in I'd have to look at the thing and I'd have to see where you're talking.
Okay.
Pieces of it are owned, I think, by the school.
Yeah.
Be the town.
Yeah.
I think pieces of it are still privately owned.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay. I thought there was something about working towards something to connect the dots along yes. that. So it's something parallel to Brandy Street. Right?
Well, it depends.
Okay.
If I know what you're talking about.
I don't know.
there's the old Washington Rochambeau route that runs behind the high school.
Right. It comes up along the side.
Goes from Bailey Road up through the high school. I have not walked it.
Yeah.
Goes behind a couple of pieces of private property.
Oh, it does. It crosses a couple of...
Yeah, in order to get onto Brandy Street.
Okay. I thought,
so is that what you're talking about? Or
well,
are you talking
about? Again, I never looked into it. I was just listening to things and trying to piece it together in my mind. I thought that that was once a town road that went all the way down to Andover.
It was, but it's been deroded.
Right. Deroded? I did not know that. I thought it was just a sort of a mothballed road.
I don't know whether they gave it to the adjacent property owner or they took it.
Town
lost it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know how that happens. It's not a ghost road. It's not a.
Except for the dead French soldiers who could be seen there at night.
Okay. The districts and the table of uses in the zoning regulations, I think they're all, up until now, they've all just been listed under the districts, and we were actually going to create a table.
So is that what Quan and
yeah.
are working on?
We're working on, and I've said this before, but I think that we should decide what kinds of uses are acceptable in what kinds of zones, and we should make them as of right, or require a site plan, but we shouldn't be having a lot of special permit uses where you have to have the public hearing and
I wouldn't mind discussion on that. I personally like the special permits because that way we get to know what's going on. Things don't just happen.
We can't tell what the future holds. You know, what may be thought of right now may be common practice in 10 years for one thing or another. So
like pickleball courts.
Exactly.
You know, kind of
there's a lot of buildings that have been reused into pickleball courts. There you go.
Yeah. So to just, you know, do a blanket thing, you know.
You heard of the pickleball like 2 years ago.
Whatever is easier to use. I think sometimes those charts are not always all that easy because they get to be, it has to be really dumbed down. Seriously.
I agree.
You know, I think if you have a list of zones and you have a list of what's allowed in those zones, to me, that's easier to read than a table that, you know, I have to keep checking. But also, if you can just look at a table and it makes sense, then that's fine. But that's a lot of thinking.
That's something that you could get examples from other towns and see which ones are readable and which ones aren't.
I also think it's really easy to go to an R1, what's allowed, what's not allowed. But I'm willing to see what's out there. What do you think?
Because I have to use them all the time.
Yeah.
I much prefer having a table that I can go to.
So it is easier for you.
It is easier for me.
Okay. Less reading, just visual boom, 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 or?
Yes, you can very quickly. What happens very, very often is somebody has a piece of property, either developed or undeveloped, and they say, what can I do with this?
Mm-hmm.
And you go get the property card, it tells you what zone it's in, and then if you don't have to read through, you know, 200 pages of zoning regulations, you can just look at the table and see, okay.
I don't have to do it every day, so you would know.
All right, and I don't know, it was last fall or it was a year ago, but I had sat down with staff and I said, okay, what are the next steps for affordable housing? And there's some things which are simply beyond the scope of what zoning can do or what the town can really do.
Because of our lack of infrastructure,
it's not just lack of infrastructure, but if a developer has not identified Bolton as a good place to build a certain kind of housing, then it's not going to get built there. And if they can't get money for it because they think it won't sell, then it's not going to get built.
Well, are you saying that not only do we have to convince developers, but also like funding institutions?
Well, what's good, we don't have to convince the lending institutions, but we have to, even if we made it very attractive for developers, they might not build it.
Okay.
And what are you thinking they won't build?
Well,
I mean, you do.
They may not want to build smaller houses. Which is what you said. The reason they want to build the bigger houses that that they can make a bigger profit on. But what I'm thinking of is the way Levittown was actually built. It was not built by a great big gigantic construction company.
Which town?
Levittown.
It was built after World War II.
Around New York.
There was one in Long Island and there was one in Pennsylvania. And it was the family that owned the business was named Levitt.
Oh, oh, oh.
And they saw the need of all these GIs coming home wanting to start families. And it was well beyond what the existing housing, which were basically, you know, now the old tenements of the cities. And so they bought a big potato farm on Long Island and just turned this flat thing into what we would consider starter homes now.
We have Bay Berry, we have Westview, and we have Cook Drive, which were all World War II.
Yep.
Welcome home.
But this was like thousands of houses. They had like about four patterns that you could choose from. So they weren't all exactly alike, but they're all basically the same thing. But it just afforded people for that time were luxuries, you know, because a lot of these people had grown up in Western cabins or tenements.
So they had central air conditioning, a very simple central air conditioning.
That's people that are looking, and you can probably, you know more than I do, businesses that are looking to grow, the first thing they do is see what kind of housing there is.
Yeah.
And so if you think back to the Cheney mills and all the other industrial revolutionary places, they actually built the housing for their employees.
Yeah.
And they were modest, wonderful little houses. But
yeah.
A lot of that
Well, the Cheney stuff was very cool. Was actually very cool.
Heat the houses with the steam from some of the mills, and there's a lot of cool history.
I had one of those.
Really, a Cheney house?
Yeah, but I didn't have the steam. I had the pipe still.
Just fun stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's kind of like, if you build it, will it come?
Yeah,
we just don't have the.
I think we're going to be. I think we're going to be a suburban.
Exactly.
Pretending to be rural town, you know, for
ever.
Right. And it has been determined. I mean, once everyone kicked up a storm and didn't complete Route 6 all the way to Rhode Island, that sort of, you know, or 384 to Rhode Island, that sort of did it, you know, kind of. They kept Eastern Connecticut more rural.
Yeah.
And I think in the long run, you can say, was that such a mistake? But it puts limitations on us, you know, kind of thing. So where can we find the sweet spot? You know, that place that gives everybody everything they want.
Well, I think that
young people want a lot of space, not such a bigger house, but they want a lot of land. Every young person I talk to, that's what they want.
Well,
I think what's going to happen is we're going to have to find more ways that are acceptable to the health district where you can share a septic and share a well.
I think so too, because I don't see how you're going to get around that. You know, we're having trouble with the existing septic treatment for the treatment plants now, you know, kind of thing. And you start adding in more housing from the suburbs who are trying to tap into your pipes, and everyone's going to be screaming, you know.
Well, I did my thesis as a housing development, because my aunt owned a piece of land in Coventry, and I had all the soil maps and the topographic maps. And so I went to show, and after I'd done it, I went to show the town planner, because I had designed, all learned how to design the septic systems and systems for all. And the town planner looks at the property and said, you'd never do it that way. You'd build one community septic system in this area that has the good soil. And then you're much freer about what you do with. And I said, and it eventually got all developed as single family houses. But
but we don't have that flexibility yet, right?
Well, you can build a community septic system.
I thought the Eastern Highland Health District.
Oh, maybe that's something that we have, another thing we have to look into.
Well, the schools are operated.
Yeah. But it's a public.
It's how the schools are operated. They have one septic system. A lot of kids going through there.
Yeah. I thought there were, I wish Mike and Patrice were here.
This is one of the questions we'll, as we raise some of these points, that's one of the questions we'll put to them.
And also community wells.
Well, community,
aren't there community wells?
Yeah, they're held to higher standards than single family home wells, but that's the only difference that I know. And then,
now I know, because St. Maurice is considered a public water system, and it's been the church and the rectory have never had a problem. That well has never been a problem, but the well for the parish center, it's always getting contaminated.
During big rainstorms.
And during big rainstorms and other
from
events.
Neighboring farms?
No.
This is, and it's not even serious. It's not E. coli, it's T. coli. T. coli is all over your hands, and it's just everywhere. It's not.
It's basically because it's on a hillside, and then once you get over, and it gets overrun by water coming from the upslope.
And also, they think it's because.
Is it an old dug well instead of a real deep well?
No, it's a deep well. And they also think it's because it's not used that much.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of the things that the guy suggested that we do, rather than having to shock it every time, was just, so we've got this thing that regularly just pumps little, runs a little water, so it moves water through the system.
It doesn't say stagnant. But there's just got to be stuff that we can do to get, I mean.
The other thing to do, maybe, is to get some of the developers at Manchester, Bolton, whatever, that do mainly residential, not necessarily commercial. Tell them we want Q&A. Pick their brain. What do they need?
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good idea.
And then if they show up and they give us feedback, then that only helps us.
I don't know, but I don't know how long this whole economic situation is going to continue. I've
not
talked
very
to, you know, things up. Well, because I've talked to a couple
people.
It
might take an impeachment or some more drastic means, but it's not going to last very long.
Because I was talking to a family that owns a grocery store, and they're ready to expand out in Wyndham. They're ready to expand their family owned grocery store, and now they put the brakes on. Hit the brakes because.
Whatever happens, it's going to come back.
Just you wait, Henry Higgins.
And also, there was an affordable housing day. That's where I got all my credits for last year. I met a developer who just does affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to have her come and talk. So I'll give her a contact, see if she's,
that'd be great.
She's down the opposite end of the state, but I think she might be willing. All right. And we have to go back, revisit this, what's happening with the DEUs or EDUs.
Oh, the EDUs. Wasn't the Board of Selectmen working on that?
Yeah, but we have to follow up with them on that.
No, it's just rear lots.
And the other thing, because I've worked with I've done work for Connecticut Water,
mm-hmm.
and they own wells in the, I know they own wells in our aquifer.
But they serve Manchester.
They're not used at this time for anything, right?
I think they're not used at this time for anything. I think we ought to contact them and see what the, what their threshold of interest is.
Yeah, and find out why there was such an issue when Mike Taylor wanted to do something. Why?
They were talking about extending the water line from Manchester, and it was just in the wrong place. You'd think it was coming up the road, but it didn't really. It was going up someplace else that was going to cost a lot of money to connect to. Mm-hmm. That's what I remember from the discussion.
Things change. I mean, they may have done something to even change that situation.
I think I missed my chance to ask.
No.
About another item under new business.
What do you want to talk about?
This is
that's with the regulations. You can talk about now because it's on the agenda.
Okay, this is something else I want to talk about.
Okay, what?
37 Notch Road.
Oh.
You know, what's going on there with them?
That's a staff report.
Okay.
And if you want to know, you can contact Mike D'Amato directly.
I know, because I'm on the inland wetlands, but I reclused myself from the meetings.
Well, that just means you can't vote. You're not right. Going to vote. It just doesn't mean you're not curious and inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah. I just wondered if there's going to be anything from this, from zoning.
about what's going on there.
So yes.
Okay.
Ask you can ask him directly. Okay. Just an email.
Thank you.
Except that he's on vacation.
That's right.
Yes.
I've run across a few land lease single family house sales where an organization buys the land and leases it out to a developer, and they build the smaller houses. And in return, you can actually get mortgages on them because they do have a value if you can find some property sales. The owner pays a lease to the organization that bought the land and pays the mortgage for the house. There's a whole set of rules and regulations that you can't make any additions unless you have
In Connecticut?
And there's really only two components, the site and everything else is improvement. This will eliminate the site cost possibly, but it's rare, but it's out there. There's houses in East Hartford and Charlie Lane and Weathersfield, the four family houses on leased land. There's a couple others I've done throughout the years.
That's something I haven't heard of before. We should look into that.
It's a land lease. I'll see if I can dig up the last appraisal I did on it. So, it's in East Hartford. I'll see if I can find it. Like the Magna Carta with all the rules and regulations. It's been around for a while. I don't know if we're going to use it any misuse anymore, but that would cut down your site or lot cost.
Is that the same idea as like the trailer parks?
Yeah, pretty much like a trailer park where you rent the space and you get the trailer on it. Exactly. Yeah. One of them had to do with churches years ago where they bought property for the large tract of land and doing that. But like a 99-year lease on it. And then nobody knows what's going to happen at the end of 99 years, but that's another story for another day.
Okay, so are we open to putting the provision for rear lots back in the subdivision regulations?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we see if staff has any issues with potential? See if they foresee any issues, potential problems.
But if everybody says no, there's no point in pursuing it with staff. But if people are open to it, then we can ask staff to,
if it's buildable, it's
to advise us about it.
Fine.
And I mean, I know that there have been you can push the envelope on it. For instance, down on Watrous Road, they took one lot, created four 50-foot frontages, and then made four rear lots and a common driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but in that down on Mark Anthony Lane,
mm-hmm.
Where they had, they had the two in the front and the two in the back, and the homeowners association never did anything, and they didn't have insurance, and the bridge washed out, and all of a sudden it was a $750,000 bill for the two homeowners in the back, because the two homeowners in the front didn't need it, and they weren't willing to pay for it. It just goes on and on.
Oh,
and
gosh,
on.
That's, yeah. My daughter's going to buy one of those houses, but she's going through Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, one of those. Mm. They wouldn't let her buy it because of that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, that would be the questions about the driveway and how that split off and how many.
Generally, a rear lot has to have its own driveway.
Driveway.
Right, there's a common driveway.
No. It has its own driveway.
If you have one rear lot, if you just have one.
I had one in Andover. We had one way in access, and then we had our own driveways that came off of that one access driveway.
We have several, we have several properties in town that do have a shared driveway.
Shared driveway.
But I think
we also if have we some call it hot ones that have their own driveway.
That have their own driveway.
I had my own driveway. We had our own driveway
yeah.
off of 316 in Andover. But from the street, probably a half a mile off, then they went off to the house on the left and our house on the right.
And they shared your driveway too?
Yes.
Oh, this would be for one house, one driveway.
Okay.
So it's a, that's why they call it a flag. You have your skinny little piece of the property, and then you have your square in the back.
Okay.
Okay.
That's why I didn't know when you said the four houses with the four separate driveways.
We have several of those with shared driveways, but there's one off of,
Watchers.
No, yeah, but I'm trying to think of, well, they have the preachy. What do you call that? The Methodist, the main road there that goes to Highland Park. What's that road? Camp Meeting
Camp
Road.
Meeting.
Camp Meeting has shared driveways.
Okay.
At least one that I know of, kind of thing. So it's possible, but again, other rules went in that said no, it can't be shared. So
yeah,
you know, kind of thing.
Minicucci sign on Eupen Road.
And shared driveway.
Their driveway goes back and then it splits to the two houses.
They're yeah.
separate driveways.
Yeah. So they have been built, but different regulations have come in at different times. So, yeah.
All right. Is there anything else anybody would like to raise at this point? I don't need to go to nine. I have dinner waiting.
In that case.
No, I don't. If those are the things you wanted to talk about.
Okay, Tom, Jim's not here.
I make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Second it.
Running Tom.
Tom. And that's at 8:23 p.m.
Okay.
Thank you all very much. And I will tell staff
we have questions.
Some of the things that we talked about and the things we want more information on, and then that'll give them some direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.